Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on a Numbers Game, live from Circle Resort Casino, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. We get tweets beating the book. Robert at RobertsB01. Just tuned in this morning, heard Gil talking about boobs. Today's show's going to be lit. I referred to people as boobs.
Yes.
If that's what you mean by talking about boobs. Uncle Bush, don't we always say that NBA teams have to go through a growth process in the playoffs and sort of graduate before they make a championship with early round losses and playoff experience? Doesn't that fit the Knicks? I don't think they're winning a championship.
I didn't think that's where he was going with that. Sure.
They're getting better. I agree with the premise, and I don't know how it's diffused in any of this.
I thought he was going to go to the Spurs with that.
I did too. Brosec 1870 on today's show, Kelly asked Gil, Baker or Tua? Cousins or Baker, Gino or Murray, and how much money would it take for you to give them your elbow? That's right. It's Kelly. Kelly Bidlin topics suggested every show. Chris Heath, over here searching MVP odds, couldn't find them, and now all of a sudden I have $150 on the White Sox to win the AL Central at 16-1. Funny how that happens, huh? Hey, what do you mean? I have a White Sox bet. I wasn't even looking for this. Sean's Fox plays, yo, I'm not denying that there's more effort being given on the defensive side, but everywhere the amount of mugging that is allowed is ridiculous, especially off the dribble. It's like, feel free to slap people's wrists all game and then be shocked at the turnover increase. And John Balduzzi, for what it's worth, buying a bionic arm with my billion or similar is leading my straw poll. So you're going to cut off your arm for the billion, then you're just going to buy the bionic arm with a billion.
I'm assuming he's not going to pay a billion for the bionic.
Listen, I don't know if you know about bionics, Kelly. You're a little young for bionics.
Oh, yeah?
But there's a generation of us that knows very well how great bionics would be in our arm, if you know what I mean. Jonathan Davis remembers what I'm talking about. He joins us now to talk NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. You can follow Jonathan on Twitter at West Coast Hockey. Just spell hockey, H-K-Y. He is our VSiN NHL analyst of the day and of all time. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing well. I got 6 million reasons to like bionics.
That's right. That's exactly right, Jonathan. You know what I'm talking about. If you could only have one of Steve Austin's bionics, what would it be? The eyesight? The jumping? What would it be?
It would be the jumping.
The jumping.
Yeah, I fit the definition of white man can't jump.
Okay. All right. Jonathan, Look, it's great. It's great seeing you. I love the action figures over the left shoulder. You said these off air, but can you tell us who you got there over your left shoulder?
Yeah, we have Gordie Howe, Bobby Orr, Sidney Crosby, Wayne Gretzky, and Steven Stamkos, which you cannot see at all. But I rotate them out. I've got about 30 of these guys.
Ovechkin is one of them.
Ovechkin is one. Okay. We have Don Cherry.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Yeah.
All right. Before we talk about the two games tonight, we finally have game one between the Canadiens and the Sabres. We have game two in the Golden Knights series. Before we get to those, I asked this of Jay Khan yesterday. I'll ask it of you, which is simply Edmonton Oilers 1985, 9 wins to start the Stanley Cup playoffs. We have two teams that are 2/3 of the way there. Avalanche, Hurricanes. Will both either get there to 9? Will they match the Oilers' start?
So 9. I think Carolina's got a better chance to get there than Colorado, just because I do think Minnesota gets a game. So I'll say Carolina. They both do, but Carolina's got the better shot.
It's interesting to me. The reason that I'm interested in it is because hockey, again, the playoffs, very random in terms of results, again, compared to the NBA playoffs. I've given the stat many times. You got to play a best of 51 in the NHL to have the same percentage of favorites get through as compared to basketball. And so for two teams to be so dominant early in a playoffs is pretty amazing. Let's start with game one of the Canadiens and the Sabres. Two series or two games in, they haven't started yet, but this is a series that many are looking forward to. It's the most coin flippy of all series. What do you got tonight?
So I'm going to start off with a trend that has been our friend for about 8 years now. Teams that win game seven on the road of a previous series and start out game one on the road of the following series have won 6 straight. And I look at, so that ties you into Montreal tonight. And I like, you know, I think, you know, if this was a game in Montreal, the Canadiens would definitely be the favorite. They'd be the favorite in the series. I'll take Montreal. And if they lose tonight, I'll double down. I think this series goes a minimum 6. Montreal won 3 games on the road in Tampa. I don't see why they can't win one on the road in this series. And actually, both these teams in the regular season, each won in the opposition's building.
Is there anything to that trend? Like if you take yourself away from the number and you think about it intuitively, team wins game seven on road, wins game one on road, subsequent series. Anything to that that makes sense to you?
Well, I think it's just better to start out on the road. I think there's more pressure on the home team to win game one. So I think that kind of plays into it. Your Buffalo even talked about it in round one against Boston. The guys were so pumped up and, you know, the organization hadn't been in a playoffs for 15 years. And so sometimes, you know, the home team squeezes their sticks a little tighter.
So you have a bunch of props in this game as well. Let's get to those. What do you have?
Yeah. So Peyton Krebs of the Buffalo Sabres plays on the top line for Buffalo, and you can get him at plus 500 to score a goal. On the value alone of a guy who plays on the team's number one line, is going to get a lot of ice time. I love it. You look at Cole Caulfield, who's got 10 goals and 16 points in 18 career games against Buffalo, struggled in round one against Tampa, but I think this is going to be a much more wide open series than what we saw against the Lightning. And then a guy like Jason Zucker, to me, is he's got 10 goals in 25 games against the Canadiens. He had two goals back in his days with Pittsburgh against Montreal in the playoffs. I like Zucker to get a goal. I like the value at plus 320. So that's where I'm targeting tonight. And as I said, going back just to a series play, I played both teams to win in six and both teams to win in seven. And as long as we get this series to six, you're going to come away with around a plus 1 unit profit.
Okay. Expecting a long competitive series. You have Tage Thompson, Alex Tuck, Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki point parlay, plus 270?
Yeah. Yeah, I took the four best players, I think, in the game tonight. I think we do see goals. And for me, this was a way just to get this at plus money. So a little pizza money bet on the four of those guys to pull together a point at plus 270.
All right. You miss anything here with Jonathan? He's got it on the website at VSiN.com, or will at least later in the day, if not up already.
No, it's up there now.
It's up there already. All right. By the way, we have a tweet from Brian M. Jonathan. Yeah. I really hope that Jonathan has the Don Cherry red suit coat action figure and not the boring Bruins one, he says.
It's the coach's jacket that they've got. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
Out of my control.
You know where we're going now. It's the let's not make the Vegas Golden Knights fans upset portion of the show. Ducks at Golden Knights. Knights, as they did in the previous series against the Mammoth. I don't know how they're up in. I don't know how they're winning hockey games, but they are getting by no matter who they seem to play here in the playoffs thus far. You got a bunch of props in this one.
Yeah, look, I'm really impressed by the Golden Knights. Their last two games, they've held each opponent to, they held Utah to one goal in clinching the series. They held Anaheim to one goal in winning game number one. So, I'm a big Vegas fan myself, just truth be told. I'll be at games three and four in Anaheim. But yeah, there are a bunch of props. Brett Howden of the Golden Knights leads the team in goals of all people. Howden had 12 and 58 regular season games. He's got five goals in now seven playoff games. You can get Howden at plus 320 just to score, or plus 350 to score a goal tonight. And he's also scored the first goal of the game in back-to-back games. So I sprinkled some pizza money on Howden for the first goal of the game and for the first Vegas goal in case Anaheim was to strike first. Ivan Barbashev of the Golden Knights, he's got a point in every playoff game. How can you not sprinkle on him? You can target a couple of ways. You can go minus like 118 for a point. I like to just kind of split a unit and play him both to score a goal and an assist, because you get a slightly better return on your investment there. Jackson Lacombe of the Anaheim Ducks, he leads the playoffs in points. I think still he's got 10 points. He's had an assist in every playoff game but one. You can still get his assist prop at a decent price at plus 105. So I'm there with Lacombe. And then I did Uncle Leo, I call him. For you Seinfeld fans, Leo Carlson of the Anaheim Ducks. He's had at least four shots on goal in every playoff game. Had 10 in the first game against Edmonton, plus 135 to get four shots on goal or more tonight. That to me is a gift.
Jonathan, can your Golden Knights, let's assume the Golden Knights get by the Ducks. You know what they say about assuming, but let's, for the purposes of this exercise, let's go with it. It's the Golden Knights and the Avalanche in the Western Conference Finals. What would you make the Avalanche in that series?
I probably make them about a minus 150 favorite.
That's it, huh? Just minus 150.
Maybe 160, but this Vegas team has been really good since the coaching change. And, I've talked about the fact that in many ways this coaching change was addition by subtraction. Gil, I had players tell me for years it was hell under Bruce Cassidy.
Interesting. Jonathan, enjoy the games tonight. Good luck with the bets and enjoy the Golden Knights ride. See how far they can get. Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Appreciate it.
Jonathan Davis, everybody. Again, at West Coast Hockey. Just spell the hockey part. HKY. Todd Wishnev joined us for Wishnev Wednesdays. Let's do it. No intro, just a picture. Purple Todd. Can we get him on the screen? Purple Todd. There we go. There's Purple Todd. Star of the Megapod, star of the Showtime docuseries Action. Good morning, Toddy.
Dale Murphy, my next door neighbors were Mormons growing up. We used to play sports with them in the yard. We used to play basketball, wiffle ball, everything. They were my next door neighbors growing up. And when Dale Murphy would show up in Pittsburgh for his, a road game, Sunday morning he would go to their Mormon church. Every Sunday they were, they would be playing. So I was all jealous that they got to meet Dale Murphy. I was like, what do you mean Dale Murphy like really comes to the church? Oh, yeah, he's there every Sunday all the time. It was like a whole thing.
How is Dale Murphy not in the Hall of Fame, by the way? How is that not a thing? That's
pretty good. At one time, the Pirates were thinking of trading Jeff Blauser Bonds for Jeff Blauser. That was a thing I remember before Bonds became Bonds. I know he's a guy that you love in your he's like
wait,
part of your
wait,
Moshe
wait,
Rabbeinu
wait,
and
wait,
your
wait.
Jesus
wait
and
a
your
minute.
Allah.
Hold
Barry
on.
Bonds runs in that circle
hold,
with you.
Hold on. First of all, let's not act like Barry Bonds with the Pirates wasn't great. Okay.
This was early in his career.
Pirates were considering like trading Bonds for Blauser. Are you serious? Oh my God.
I think it was like the first year. It was like his first year, maybe.
Okay.
I remember.
Let's start with Todd Wishnev with the rarest of all Todd Wishnev moments. Todd Wishnev has a hockey play for us. Would you like to do that first?
Oh, you want to start with that?
Let's start with a hockey play.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Okay. So I watch, I've been watching this and I've been doing good with the NHL playoffs, especially with the first period unders. But, the Flyers Hurricanes series, I watched the whole first Hurricanes series where they just defend like there's no tomorrow. You can't even get a good shot on goal ever in the whole first series. I forget who they blew out. It was like every game was like 3-0, 2-0, 2-1. So then they play the Flyers who beat the Penguins in the first series. And now the Flyers come in the first game looks like the ice is tilted. It literally looks like the Hurricanes are playing on tilted ice. That's how much time the Hurricanes have the puck and the Flyers don't have the puck and the Flyers get nothing. So game two, I come out with Flyers under 2.5 minus 190. I don't care. I'll lay the minus 190. There's no way the Flyers are getting 3 goals. Well, 5 minutes in, the Flyers have 2 goals already. One on a fluke, one on a power play. It's 2-0. I've lost, of course, right? There's no way. No, Hurricanes just decide to throw up the 0 for the entire rest of the game, and I somehow win the Flyers under. So I'm going back to the well.
There you go.
With Flyers under, and it's much cheaper today because they're home, but tomorrow night it's Flyers under 2.5 minus 136. I paid 190 in game two because they played at Carolina. I still don't think the Flyers can score. I've been watching these games. You can't even get a good shot. It's ridiculous how good this team is defensively. They are the ultimate buttoned up hockey team. They do not allow shots on goal, period. End of story.
Todd likes a buttoned up sports team. He doesn't like a buttoned down sports team. He likes a buttoned up sports team. All right. So under Flyers 2.5 goals. That's the play.
Minus 136.
Minus 136 from Toddy Wishnev. Now, Todd used to come on this show back in the day, back when we were at the South Point, early days of the South Point. Todd used to, we used to have Wishnev Wednesdays. And other shows bid our segment. We're not going to talk about that. But we did an airing of grievances. Todd had airing of grievances on the show. By the way, Todd Wishnev, one of the great moments in VSiN history, once did 2 segments by himself on this show. Did you know that?
I did know that.
2 segments. After my second Achilles,
I wasn't very good
at
all.
Pulmonary embolism. I couldn't make the show. I was about to die. And Todd and Mike Palmer, then Mike just abandoned Todd. And so Todd was left for 2 segments. And I don't believe he ever got recompense for that, by the way. That's another story. But we used to do the airing of grievances when Todd would come on for Wishnev Wednesdays. And Todd warned me he has some airing of grievances. Would you like to go? Go ahead.
Sure. This is not exactly an airing of grievances, but I'm calling out Stephen F. Fezzik. And I will tell you why. Now, granted, he's made an entire career, okay, of saying the market is always right. And he's right. 98.5, 98, 99% of the time, he's 100% right. The market is right. And that's what his whole life is based on, if he can get some kind of difference from the actual market. And of course, he's correct, because in the long run, like I said, 99%, 98% of the time, the market is correct and the geniuses are correct. However, there are exceptions. Now, one of those exceptions may have been the Celtics and the Sixers, okay? And sometimes this happens when the market gets too overwhelmed with things. We see it sometimes in baseball where, you know, a big-name team will get overrated for the first 2 months of the season when they're losing game after game, and they'll never adjust. The Ravens last year in football was a perfect example. They were just overrated. No one wanted to adjust them down because of previous seasons, because the big smarty pantses are like, oh, no, it's going to be a reversion. Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Okay, I'm just going to read you from Game 7, the starting lineup for the Boston Celtics. Luka Garza, White, Brown, Harper Jr., okay, Pritchard played most of his minutes, and Schneierman. This is Schneierman from Creighton, okay? I don't watch NBA basketball during the regular season, so, you know, I just remember them from their college days. The Sixers were playing Paul George, Embiid.
Because if you did, you would know it's Schneierman and not Schneierman. But go ahead.
I don't even care what his name is. Okay. I don't even care how you spell it. Schlittler, Schlitter, whatever you say.
No, don't do it. Don't try.
George, Embiid, Oubre, Maxey, and Edgecombe. Okay. Now, had I been watching this series carefully, I would have unloaded the boats on the Philadelphia 76ers. I haven't been, because in the NBA, I don't watch it enough. I'll just try to play with the over-unders if I see, you know, things getting out of control one way or the other. But now, the Celtics, without Tatum, were still favored, Gilly, by what, 4.5, 5 points?
Yeah.
Now, by the way, the Celtics brought in a guy named Gonzalez, okay? I don't even know who he is. Hugo Gonzalez. Maybe if I watched the NBA, I would know who Hugo Gonzalez is. But I don't get it, okay? Cada. I like Cada. He was good at Utah State. I've seen him a couple of times in the NBA. He's pretty good. Hauser. These are all like White. Is going to be the star now? What are you talking about here?
So
this whole thing was crazy talk.
I'm glad you're bringing this up, because there is a betting lesson in this, right? That you cannot have like 100% fealty to the market. I asked the question. The reason this came up, I asked the question of Kelly earlier that day on Friday. I was like, hey, if you gave the Knicks truth serum, who would they rather play? Right. This was headed into Game 7, the Celtics or the Sixers. And I thought it was a very good question. Kelly thought it was a very good question because of the dynamics of how the Celtics were just chucking up threes. There was no adjustments, that kind of thing. And Fezzik came in here and lambasted me for the question afterwards, right? Later in the show.
What is he talking about? The Celtics didn't have Drew Holiday.
Right.
They didn't have Porzingis, and they didn't have Horford. So basically you had all these other guys you never even heard of on the floor. And if you just looked at the floor for 10 seconds and you see like ragdolls hanging on Embiid, whoever was trying to guard it, you'd be like, how is this team favored by 4.5 points against it? So sometimes these market guys are wrong, especially because they're watching the NBA all season. And we all know the NBA playoffs is a completely different season than the NBA regular season. But meanwhile, genius boy, because all he can do is have fealty to the market and drink in the market and say, because he doesn't know anything. Right. He just knows what the market is. Now, he does know that the market is always right. And that's all he needs to know. And he's usually 100% correct. However, sometimes there is. And why was this? Why were the Celtics still favored? You tell me, Gilly. Why was it? Because they were champions and blah, blah, blah. But all those champion guys are not on the team anymore. Holiday, Tatum's not playing. Holiday's not there. Porzingis, Horford. Sometimes the market just can't get out of its own. Last year with the Ravens, right? How many weeks in a row did we say, maybe the Ravens really stink?
Yeah.
No, the geniuses, like the Fezziks of the world. What are you talking about? It's only three games. There has to be preseason. I don't know. Cleve T.A. gets on. Give me the statistics. And I like Cleve T.A. I don't want to throw him in here because he's no Fezzik. But the point is that Fezzik is right 99% of the time. But sometimes he is vastly wrong, including in where he talks about the rules of when we play tennis. And we'll get to that when we come back in a moment.
Wait, you're not staying for a second segment, are you?
Just for 2 seconds. I want to get in my thing about the Fezzik Dennis.
Okay, you're welcome back. First guest mandated comeback with Todd on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game. Don't forget about our great offer going on right now for a limited time. Get our annual subscription, normally $240, for just $199. When you sign up today, we'll throw in 2 extra months for free. Last all year long with VSiN Pro plus 2 months. 14 months total for less than 50 cents a day with promo code PRO. Get access to our daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time DraftKings and Circa betting splits, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, 24/7 video and full show replays on the VSiN Watch app, plus all of our special edition betting guides for every major sport throughout the year. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe. Use promo code PRO. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. A little bit of baseball news. Not that he's peak Correa these days. Obviously, the better part of his career is in the past, but Jeff Passan reporting at ESPN that Houston Astros shortstop Carlos Correa will miss the remainder of the 2026 season after tearing a tendon in his ankle. Ooh. He told reporters in Houston he'll soon undergo surgery, be out 6 to 8 months. Now, I asked myself, as you did, wait a minute, when did Carlos Correa tear the tendon in his ankle? Mm-hmm. I don't remember hearing about this. He told reporters that he suffered a, quote, complete tear, unquote, while taking swings in the batting cage before Tuesday's game against the Dodgers. Wow. In the batting cage before the game started, and that's his season. Man.
That's brutal.
And you do have a season here in the early going, especially in the American League, where it's like nobody's good. So that's a loss for the Astros for sure. We bring in Paul Sporer, our buddy, at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R on Twitter. Sorry we couldn't keep Todd for two. He'll continue his rant next time he's on. Paul joins us now, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He works at Fangraphs and, of course, the host of the Sleeper in the Bus podcast. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Cal.
How often do you hear about the old batting cage tearing of a tendon in your ankle that'll cost you your season?
Absolutely brutal. And, you know, Correa was having a pretty good season. You know, he came back over last year in the trade with Minnesota, you know, back to Houston, and was playing pretty well. You know, their offense has actually been pretty good to the point where maybe they aren't completely dead if the pitching starts pulling in the right direction, because like you said, no one's running away and hiding from these teams that are struggling. But this is a big blow. I mean, he was filling in at short for Peña, who's out. Obviously Peña's not out for the year, so they'll get him back. But that's huge. That's huge. And their nightmare season continues. You know, I tabbed them, the horror movie villain, You Can't Kill Him, in the offseason because I thought they had a pretty good offseason. But I don't know, man, we might be getting to the final Halloween here. Maybe Jamie Lee Curtis finally got him, because things just, like, the pitching is a nightmare. And now the offensive injuries are piling up. I mentioned Peña was already on. Their starting center fielder, Jake Myers, already on the IL. Yiner Diaz is also joining Correa on the IL, but not for the year. Correa is the only one right now toast for the year. But if they lose the offense, then they have nothing going on in Houston, and they might need to really start tearing this thing down and start turning the page.
Yeah, maybe Jamie Lee Curtis finally got him. It's a good analogy for the Astros, whose pitching staff has given up the most home runs of all pitching staffs in all of Major League Baseball this year, 15 and 22, just four games out of the lead, but also a game out of the cellar of the AL West. Let's talk about the other side of things. The New York Yankees. I mean, obviously the Dodgers are the Dodgers. And even when they have a swoon, you look up and they're like, oh, look, they're still leading the division and they still have a plus 67 run differential. Obviously the Braves have been fantastic. They have the best run differential in all of baseball. They've got the best record in all of baseball at 26 and 11. But I want to talk about the Yankees specifically, because the Yankees have a very slim lead over the Rays in the AL East. But again, plus 79 run differential versus a plus 12 run differential. These two teams are not like each other. And the Yankees have reinforcements coming. I'm just curious. Minus 390 division odds is probably a little too steep. But man, do you see any team rising? Is it if there's a team to rise and challenge them in this division, who is it in your opinion?
That's a really good question, because I came into the year really liking the Red Sox, and that's obviously started so poorly that them coming back from 10 back on the Yankees now, I just I don't really see that. And you mentioned kind of the discrepancy between them and the Rays in terms of like how they're getting this done. And, you know, we all know that run differential is not an end all be all, but it's a great starting point. And 80 to 10 loosely plus 79 plus 12 is a pretty gigantic discrepancy to tell you that these two teams, despite being a game and a half apart, are quite different and that the Yankees are better. It is shaping up like their division to lose. I was already a little bit cold on the Blue Jays. I think part of that was I was late to them last year, and maybe I was just like, well, I wasn't wrong. They're going to suck this year. So I might have been a little bit stubborn. But so far, they're not really playing like they're headed back to the World Series this year. The Orioles, I thought, could be good again because I thought they had a good offseason, but they're kind of treading water. I think they're probably the one even over the Orioles if they got the right health going. That the Orioles could maybe do it, because I just don't see it with the Jays. And the Rays losing Pepiot, by the way, that's a sneak injury for the year that really snuck up on us. It was supposed to be a small injury, just like McClanahan last year, and now he's cooked for the year. So I think who has the most pieces to get it done, it would be the O's, but I don't think it's even worth chasing. Because like you said, the Yankees are going to have reinforcements coming in the form of, oh, I don't know, how about Gerrit Cole and Carlos Rodon? They're that? Literally going to be adding two aces. Now, yeah, they won't necessarily be aces right away, but by the time it matters, September, October, they could be rounded into ace form. You know, they're supposed to come back in the summer. They can shake the cobwebs off July, August, whatever. If they're cooking with gas in September, that's Cole and Rodon added to what they've already got going. And then they might just make a huge October run. You never know in October. I don't want to go too far with it, but this is looking like a really good team right now. I think Cam Schlittler is super, super for real too.
Speaking of aces, and you just sort of segued into a whole discussion about AL Cy Young when you bring up Schlittler. To bring it up.
I have to go. Bring Todd back. I got to go.
I got to bring it up. Tarek Skubal, loose bodies in the elbow. Surgery coming. We shall see how long he's out. As a Tigers fan, as a baseball fan, like, what's your level of just sadness about all this? And then what does it mean for the Tigers, in your opinion, and the outlook for this season? What does it mean for AL Cy Young in terms of a bet?
I did the thing you shouldn't have done. You put your favorite player on your biggest fantasy team. Now I'm in some real trouble.
Sorry.
So, you know, the team was playing well. We'll see if they can sustain without Skubal. Same thing goes for the Tigers, right? Although they weren't playing as well, right? The problem here is that they had a chance. We mentioned how the AL has not run away and hidden.
Yeah.
They had a chance to get the jump on the upstart teams. You know, people like the Royals a little bit. There's some White Sox love, which is fair, by the way. They're 17 and 19. The White Sox are actually playing pretty well relative to their expectations. But Guardians and Royals, you know, not doing too much. If the Tigers had played the way they should have been, at least, you know, against expectations, if they had a 5-6-7 game lead right now, this wouldn't feel as bad. But they're in a flat tie with the Guardians, under 500, I might add. And now their would-be ace is throwing the ball at people and right back up to his old tricks that we had to talk about a lot last year with Framber Valdez, namely with crossing up his catcher. But his attitude seems to be a really, really big problem. Now, we only get these small instances. I don't want to go too far with it because we make a lot out of people in their worst moments in sports. We don't know how he is behind the scenes, but we're starting to put together a portfolio of issues here with Framber, and it's not great. Flaherty falling off has been a huge problem for the Tigers too. They're in some trouble, plain and simple. I think the offense is pretty good top to bottom, especially if they all get pulling in the right direction. But I don't know if this pitching is going to be able to sustain with Skubal out. I have some grave concerns about my favorite team and what they're going to be able to do this year. I think the injuries are just becoming too much right now, because don't forget, Casey Mize just went on the IL too.
Yes.
And you know, if you had Framber and Mize at the top, okay, I can start to feel a little bit better about getting through this, but you're going from Framber to Cater Montero as the number two, who's pitching pretty well himself, but he's a 4-5. When you got Cater Montero pitching well as a 4-5, that's where it's a big win. If you're pushing him into the two spot, it's tough. And then for the AL side, to answer your final question, it's wide open. But we got to go back to the team we were just talking about, the Yankees. I mentioned one briefly, Cam Schlittler. He's the upstart. And his veteran teammate, Max Fried. I think those are the two in pole position right now. I'd have no problem getting down on either of them. And then any number of guys as long shots behind them. You know, I don't know that Jose Soriano's, the best idea right now. I really do like him, but we're seeing him kind of come back to earth. but maybe even another Yankee for the super long shot. How great has Will Warren been this year? You know, you can take a lot of different directions with it, but I would really stick with the two Yankees right now if I was going to get on the AL Cy Young now that Scooble's out. Do not worry about Scooble. He's going to miss too much time no matter, of course.
Will Hill made the case earlier on the show for Jacob DeGrom at 18-1. Do you hate that? Yeah.
Nope, don't hate it at all. I got I honestly, I didn't know where we were on time. I could rattle off so many names right now that you could look at, right? Like all the other aces that you kind of discounted this year because you thought Scooble might three-peat, even though three-peating is so hard, it was hard to look at other guys. But yeah, you can go the DeGrom route. I got no problem with that. One, I know I mentioned that the Blue Jays aren't playing that well, but it's not Gausman and Cease's fault. You could look their way. You can go a lot of different directions with this. I like the DeGrom call out, though. That's a really good one.
All right, Paul, sorry we had to bring it up, but had to be brought up. Tarik Skubal.
I understand. We got to do our job still.
And for him, maybe the difference in $150 million or something like that. We'll see.
Brutal. I hope not.
He'll still be okay, but you get the idea. Paul, appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
I'm staying till the next episode.
That's all the guests are doing that. Yeah, thank you, Paul. Speaking of which, the next segment, Nick Whalen. Let's just keep him coming. Talk some NBA playoffs. Get Nick's take on the games tonight. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The sharp plays, unmatched transparency with records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, and alerts directly from the pros. You can scan the QR code in the bottom left of your screen for more. Sharpplays.com. Check them out. We get tweets, beating the book. Denver Lance corroborating what Todd said about in 1992, the Braves nearly traded for superstar Barry Bonds, with reports suggesting a deal was in place that could have involved shortstop Jeff Blauser before Jim Leland, the Pirates manager, said, "What? We're not doing that." Bonds instead signed a record $4.7 million one-year deal with the Pirates, and then after that, of course, signed the mega deal with the Giants. Can you imagine?
Man.
Oh, my God. Never heard that nonsense.
Yeah, he was, as you said, I can't remember on air or off air, but he was still pretty dang good when he was with the Pirates.
I said it on air. He's great. He was still great.
Mm-hmm.
Chance Copperpot. Oh, come on, Gilly. You got to at least read my concession tweet. Sorry, I haven't read a Chance Copperpot tweet all day. So he's Chance was getting blasted by Jared Betts. He says, "I also let the joke die about the maple syrup, and Jared Betts is cool, so we're all good now, Chance." There it is. We're on record. Trip Tepper. Love you, Chance. Love you, Jared. Trip Tepper. "With those casinos in Prim shuttering, perhaps Jason Weingarten could find a claw machine for sale during the liquidation process."
Whoa, that's a good call. There's probably some treasures for sale after those.
That's right. Jason came back on the show and imparted us with the wisdom that the two best days in a claw machine owner's life are the day he buys it and the day he sells it. Roger Jones. "Gil, I think those of us here in Winnipeg would appreciate you adding an asterisk to that 1985 Oilers start. Edmonton Oilers won their first 9 playoff games that year." He said, "Beloved Jet Captain Dale Hawerchuk was viciously cross-checked and broke his ribs. In the second round, the Oilers beat the 5th overall Jets 4-0. All right, there you go. There's a disclaimer. And Rhodes knows, "All right, if Todd can demand a second segment to complain, I declare, since you, Gil, Kelly, and Bear are all on board, we have to do a telethon for my left arm after the NBA season, but before NFL season." I think he already did the thing with his arm. I think it's gone.
Got some NBA news coming down before we get to Nick Whalen. Ayo Dosunmu will be available to play in tonight's game 2.
All right, so they get Ant for game 1. They're going to get Dosunmu for game 2. Another reinforcement for the T-Wolves, up 1-0 in their best-of-7 conference semifinal against the Spurs. Nick Whalen, co-host of Prop Points, which is coming up at the top of the hour, does join us to discuss the NBA playoffs. Nick, good morning.
Morning, fellas. Good to be here.
Good to see you, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow Nick, by the way, on Twitter at Whalen. Just replace the letter L with the number 1. What of the Spurs and the T-Wolves? Let's start there tonight. Spurs down. And I said earlier, pick your cliche, back against the wall, must win situation, whatever it is. They're 9, they're 10. Let's call it 10 now. 10-point favorites, reduced juice consensus on the Spurs here to try to even this up. But as Kelly just mentioned, now more reinforcements for the T-Wolves. Where do you stand on this game tonight?
Yeah, obviously a dangerous spot for San Antonio after letting game one slip away. You know, I think if that Champagne three falls from the wing, we feel completely differently about this series. I think you still tip your cap to Minnesota for how they played in game one. And I thought the relentlessness with which they were willing to attack Victor Wembanyama, even on a night when he finished with 12 blocks. Now we can litigate how many of those should have been goaltends or fouls, but I think Terrence Shannon put it really well. Like we can't just not attack him, right? You don't want to end up on the highlight reel of guys who are shying away from the basket or just dribbling under the hoop because Victor Wembanyama is in the vicinity. And I don't expect the Timberwolves to go away from that as this series continues. You have another good attacker now in Ayo Dosunmu back on the court. I think we likely see a more extended version of Anthony Edwards, who played only 25 minutes off the bench in game one, was excellent in those minutes. But the return of Dosunmu, guys, it helps Minnesota on both ends. You know, all due respect to the career that Mike Conley has had, you probably don't want him playing 25 minutes a night in this series. We'll see less of him. We'll see less of Bones Highland, who was 0 of 6 from the field in game one. So I think this makes Minnesota even more dangerous. I would lean toward grabbing the 10.5 with the Timberwolves. A couple props that I would look for in this game tonight. You know, I was all over De'Aaron Fox in game one. That completely blew up. I will go back to the well on him with the assists. -131 over 5.5 at DraftKings. He's gone over this number in 4 straight, including in game one. I think the Spurs have to do a better job trying to set up Victor Wembanyama near the rim. I don't know if you need Victor Wembanyama taking 8 threes, you know, doing all these ISOs. I think De'Aaron Fox operates more as a facilitator tonight. And then the return of Dosunmu, guys, I think it impacts Julius Randle as well. His points prop is down to 18.5. I'll still lean under on that. He got to 21 in game one, but he played 41 minutes. He took 20 shots, the most he's taken in any game so far in the playoffs. Again, we'll see Dosunmu. We'll see more Anthony Edwards. I think that takes away from Julius Randle offensively.
Okay, to the game that precedes that one tonight, game two of the Knicks-Sixers series. Sixers, call it sort of the letdown spot or just the natural sort of letdown after the high of slaying the dragon that is the Celtics in Sixers history. They come back now for game two. One who believes in that sort of narrative would probably change to, okay, now we're ready to play basketball. Knicks are still a 7.5-point favorite after beating the Sixers by 39 in game one, total 215.5. How are you playing this?
Yeah, we're in the midst of kind of an all-time run right now for the New York Knicks, who, you know, just laid the wood in 3 straight postseason games. I was pretty surprised that this game was as lopsided as it was. You could kind of tell, like, 5-6 minutes in, like, okay, I probably should have read into the fatigue narrative a little bit more for Philadelphia, just kind of an obvious letdown spot. But, you know, it's not like they had 2 or 3 days off before game two. So I think that still could be something that carries over tonight, specifically with Joel Embiid, who just looked like he was operating at like 75% in game one. He needs to be right if the Sixers have any chance to win this series. I do lean over on that total, Gil. You know, obviously some regression is coming for the Knicks offensively at some point. I don't think they put up a 142 offensive rating tonight, but I also think there should be some offensive progression coming for the Sixers, especially Joel Embiid, especially Tyrese Maxey, who was eerily quiet in game one. The shooting has also been a huge issue for Philadelphia, not just in game one, but through these entire playoffs. They are shooting just under 31% as a team on wide open threes in the postseason. They were 2 of 14 in game one. They're 5 of 26 combined over their last two games. You have to think at some point that comes around. So I do lean over here, mostly because I think we see some progression from Philly. I would look at VJ Edgecombe over 12.5 points tonight. Got to 12 in game one in just 28 minutes. He's taken double digit shots now in 3 straight. And I'm going to keep fading Karl Anthony Towns, guys. We're getting basically the same number on the PRA as we were in game one. I just think it's a really tough matchup. He has a long history of getting into foul trouble against Joel Embiid. He had 3 fouls in the first half in game one. I don't know if that's something that he'll be able to solve.
Yesterday, we had 2 game ones in the other 2 series. I'm going to assume the answer to the question with OKC and the Lakers is a no to the question of, did anything surprise you last night in either of those 2 games, the outcomes? Or how they were played.
Yeah, we can start with the late game, I suppose. And no, nothing really surprised me. I will say I thought the Lakers played pretty well for about 65% of this game. I mean, we forget because you see the final score, 108-90. We forget that the Lakers were only down 4 midway through the third quarter before OKC went on a little bit of a run to close the third and basically put the game away. But I thought the Lakers came out with a pretty strong defensive game plan. You know, I thought this pretty easily could have looked like game one of the OKC Phoenix series, where, you know, they're up like 30 in the third quarter and it just never feels close. But if you would have told me that Austin Reeves is going to have the shooting night that he did and the Lakers would still be in this game with a chance to steal it in the third quarter. I would say that's a win for the LA Lakers. Now, did they miss an opportunity? That's the question, because this was one of the worst playoff games of SGA's career. Statistically, didn't shoot it overly well, finished under 20 points, had 7 turnovers. It's like, man, if you get a better game from Austin Reeves, could the Lakers have won this? I don't know if I would go that far, but either way, it's going to be an uphill battle for the LA Lakers. You know, we talked last week about the turnover issues they've had. That's just going to continue to be trouble. They had 17 last night. I don't really see that changing. In the Pistons-Cavs game, guys, I came away really disappointed in the Cavaliers. Yeah, the Pistons played well, but I thought that was like a C-minus game from Cleveland.
It certainly was, and you wonder about missed opportunities. It was still 93-93 as badly as they were playing.
Right. Crazy. And both those games.
Couldn't get it done. Couldn't get it done at all. Would you take a Cleveland-adjusted series price down a game?
I still think they're the much better team, guys. You know, Detroit, for most of these playoffs, has felt like such a one-man show. You know, they got contributions from Duncan Robinson, and obviously Tobias Harris is on his, like, Jeremy Lin run right now. This is now 6 straight games with 20-plus points, something he hasn't done in, like, 5 years. So maybe he cools off at some point. I don't know if Detroit can play a whole lot better than it did last night based on the version of the Pistons that we've seen in the playoffs. Obviously, the regular season version of the Pistons looked a lot better, but that was probably their first or second best game they've played all playoffs. Whereas I think there's a lot of room for improvement for the Cavaliers. I wouldn't say a single Cavalier played a great game or even a good game last night, including Donovan Mitchell. They also turned it over 20 times, which is just totally unacceptable in a second round playoff game. They gave up 16 offensive rebounds, just these little things that have kind of haunted the Cavaliers throughout the season. So it's really going to come down to Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Play a whole lot better. You know, Mitchell's going to be Mitchell no matter what, but they can't get dramatically outplayed by Jalen Duren. Jared Allen can't pick up 3 fouls in the first half.
Who's in the NBA Finals, Nick?
Oh, boy. I mean, the Eastern Conference is where it gets tough. I will say we're going to get Knicks Thunder, which I know is the default, and I think the Thunder win that series in 6 games.
Another vote for the Knicks Thunder on this Wednesday morning. What can we expect on Prop Points, top of the hour, with you and Jeff?
No Jeff Erickson today, guys. Oh. Brandon Kravitz is actually stepping in. Jeff has a doctor's appointment, Gil, so I'll make sure to get a full recap on that, see if there are any shenanigans. But we'll be talking a lot of NBA. We'll have Len Hochberg on talking golf. We'll have Eric Halterman breaking down baseball for us.
Okay, that's at the top of the hour with Nick, manning the ship with Jeff at the doctor's appointment. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. We look forward to it. Nick Whalen,
anytime, guys.
Adam,
thank you.
Whalen with the number 1 substitute in the L on Twitter. Coming back.